scientific people know very well that time is only a kind of space. We can move forward and backward in time, just as we can move forward and backward in space. To prove this theory, I invented a machine to travel through time. If you pressed one lever, the machine went back into the past. If you pressed the other lever, the machine glided forward into the future. With this machine, I set out to explore time. One summer evening, toward the end of the 19th century, some friends of mine were gathered in my home in Richmond, England. As I entered...
Good heavens, man, what happened to you?
Were you in a wreck? You look a fright.
I have just travelled through time.
You don't actually expect us to believe that you have travelled into the future with that nickel and ivory contraption you showed us last week?
I'd give a penny a line for a verbatim article for my paper. I don't mind telling you the story, though most of it will sound false to you.
You're absolutely right. The whole thing's preposterous.
But it's true, every word of it. And if this will help you believe me, here are two white flowers I brought back with me. Gentlemen, since this morning I have lived 8 days in the future. Such days as no human being ever lived before. At daylight, I started making the last adjustments on my time machine. I gave it a last tap, tried all the screws again, and put in a final drop of oil. I climbed up, sat in the saddle, and took the starting lever in my hand. I suppose I felt like a man who holds a pistol to his skull, wondering what will come next. At first, I moved the advance lever ever so slightly. Had anything happened? For a moment, I suspected my mind had tricked me. I looked at the clock. I had moved ahead 5 hours. Then I drew a breath, set my teeth, gripped the starting lever with both hands, pushed it to its extreme position, and went flying off into time. Day went into night, and in another moment it was tomorrow. The change from night to day was like the flapping of a great black wing. The sensations of time traveling were excessively unpleasant. It was a feeling of helpless, headlong motion, and I felt the same horrible anticipation of an imminent smash. I went on, still gaining velocity. The landscape was misty and vague, so I slowed down. I was in the same place. Only the time had changed. I advanced the rate of speed again. The little hands on the dials raced around faster and faster. I thought, how exciting to be traveling in the future. What wonderful advances man must have made in all these years. Then I resolved to stop. I grabbed the lever. The time machine went reeling over and I was flung headlong through the air. There was the sound of a clap of thunder in my ears. A pitiless hail was hissing around me, and I was sitting on a soft lawn in a garden near my overturned machine. Fine hospitality, I said, for a man who has traveled all these years to be here. I stood up and looked around me. A colossal carved figure loomed indistinctly beyond me through the hazy downpour. I advanced toward the figure. It was very large, made of white marble in the shape something like a winged sphinx. The figure was seated on a pedestal of bronze. The sightless eyes seemed to watch me. There was the faint shadow of a smile on the lips. Then panic gripped me. Do men still live on the Earth? What are they like? Are they still human? I turned frantically to the time machine. I will not stay here. I must get back to my own time. For the first time, I discovered what year I was in. 802,701. I had traveled over 800,000 years. Just then the storm ended. The scene was lit by the glow of the sun. Already I saw other vast shapes. Huge buildings with intricate parapets and tall columns.
I removed my jacket. Then I heard voices and people came toward me. They were small creatures, perhaps only 4 feet high, clad in tunics girdled at the waist with a leather belt. They wore sandals on their feet and their legs and heads were bare. I noticed for the first time how warm the air was. One came toward me carrying a chain of beautiful flowers and placed it about my neck. They had a strange but very sweet and musical language, which I did not understand. They struck me as being a very beautiful and graceful people, but indescribably frail. At the sight of them, I suddenly regained confidence. I have nothing to fear. These people are so simple and childlike. Is this what has happened to man in 800,000 years? I thought to myself. Their little pink hands felt the time machine. No, no, keep away, you might get hurt. I removed the two levers which set the machine in motion, so no one could use it but me. The little people danced around me and pushed me along in a playful way. You want me to go with you? You want to show me to your friends, don't you? As I walked along with them, I realized that there were no small houses to be seen. The single house had vanished. These people lived in communities in these large palace-like buildings I'd seen in the distance. As we entered a building of colossal dimensions, more of the little people surrounded me. They took me into a great dining hall, with many long tables and cushions scattered about. Upon the cushions, my hosts seated themselves, signing for me to do likewise. Yes, I'll be glad to join you. I am hungry. They seemed to have no meat or vegetables, for the entire meal consisted of large and succulent fruit. I tried to learn their speech, but it was difficult to learn from them, or to teach them, because they were so childlike. I finally discovered what they called themselves. I am man.
Eloy!
That evening, I went for a long walk alone. As I wandered about, I mused, where are their farms, their factories, their cities? Where is their work done? I came upon many ruins on that walk that showed vanished civilizations. It seemed to me that I had happened upon humanity on the wane. The ruddy sunset made me think of the sunset of mankind. My attention was attracted many times by several pretty little structures in the ground that had an unusual yellow metal canopy. I thought how odd it was that wells still existed in this strange time. I continued to wander until the moon had risen. The Eloy disappeared before dark. I decided I must find a place to sleep and headed in the direction of the White Sphinx. I found the lawn where I had landed, but it looked different now. Something was missing. My time machine is gone! At once, like a lash across the face, came the possibility of losing my own age, of being left helpless in this strange new world. The thought of it was an actual physical sensation. I could feel it grip me at the throat and stop my breathing. In another moment, I was in a passion of fear and running with great leaping strides to the spot where I had last seen the time machine. I searched the bushes frantically. How could they have moved it? They are so weak and childish. Am I to be trapped here in this unknown world? I wept with absolute wretchedness. Then, exhausted, I slept. I awoke in the freshness of the morning. As I saw the Eloy playing their childish games, I could not believe that they had taken my time machine. They had neither the strength nor the cunning. I returned to the spot where I had left the time machine. Examining the lawn, I found unmistakable marks in the grass. The machine had been dragged away, and there were odd narrow footprints which the Eloy could not have made. I followed the marks which led up to the pedestal and the White Sphinx. The time machine was in the pedestal. I went and rapped at the deep-framed panels which led into the building. Open up! Give me back my time machine!
You there, come help me. Please help me. But the Eloi would not come near. There was something they feared about the pedestal. There was nothing I could do at that moment but try to learn more about the people. That way I might find out what was behind all of this. For the next few days, I tried to make friends with the little people. I talked to them and tried to learn their ways. On long walks through their lovely countryside, I saw no sign of planting or harvesting, no evidence of work of any kind. There were flowers only. The land was a perpetual garden. The Eloi's clothing was of a fine texture and beautifully sewn, but I saw no machines. Their tables were always piled high with fruit. But where was it grown? How was it brought to them? A peculiar feature which attracted my attention was the presence of the circular wells which I mentioned. Several, as it seemed to me, were of a very great depth. One lay by the path where I often walked. Like the others, it was rimmed with bronze and protected by a little cupola from the rain. I tried to ask the Eloi about it, but they would not answer, and they would not come near me. I peeked into the darkness, but I could see no gleam of water. Further, I threw a scrap of paper into it, and instead of fluttering slowly down, it was at once sucked swiftly out of sight. Then I heard a noise. It sounded like the pounding of heavy machines. Several possibilities flashed through my mind. Is it a mine? A factory? Was all the work done underground? Does someone live down there? That night as I slept, I was very restless and had an unreal feeling that something surrounded me. I woke with a start and had an odd fancy that some grayish animal had just rushed by me. Help! Help! What were they? Was it just a bad dream? The moon was setting, and upon the hill I thought I could see ghosts. Several times as I scanned the slope, I saw white figures. Twice I fancied I saw a solitary, white, ape-like creature running up the hill. The next morning I explored a dark passage in some ruins. Suddenly I halted spellbound. A pair of luminous eyes stared at me out of the darkness. At once the eyes darted sideways, and something white ran past me. I turned with my heart in my mouth and saw a queer little ape-like figure, its head held down in a peculiar manner, running past me. It was a dull white and had yellow hair on its head and down its back. I cannot even say whether it ran on all fours or only with its forearms held very low. I chased it outside past some of the Eloi, but I could not catch him as he leaped into one of those round well-like openings of which I have told you. I lit a match, and looking down, I saw a small, white, moving creature with large, bright eyes, which regarded me steadfastly as it retreated. It made me shudder. It was so like a human spider. It was clambering down the wall, and now I saw for the first time a number of metal foot and hand rests, forming a kind of ladder down the shaft. The Eloi refused to answer my questions about the strange creature that had just disappeared into the ground. And as they resumed their play, the truth gradually dawned on me. Man had not remained one species, but had differentiated into two distinct animals. The Eloi, who were gentle and helpless, and these other creatures who dwelled in darkness beneath the earth. The structures like wells were really passageways for the undergrounders. Somehow in their underground civilization, they did all of the work for the Eloi. I wondered, what is hidden down there at the foot of the shaft? And then the thought occurred to me. These strange underground creatures must have taken my time machine. But why had they taken it? And why too, if the Eloi were masters, could they not restore the machine to me?